Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast on a Monday. I guess I'm going to call this part one. We're probably going to be back a little bit later today as well to kind of recap some of what happened during free agency. So really kind of a couple of quick pods here today is what these are going to be. But we wanted to talk, of course, about the Browns' big move, the first big move that they made, and that is acquiring Jerry Jeudy for a fifth and a sixth round pick. That's going to happen on Wednesday at 4 o'clock when the new league year begins. But obviously the terms are agreed to. Jerry Jeudy coming to the Browns, Mary Kay. This is a player that the Browns have sort of been circling for a little while. It's kind of reminiscent of Elijah Moore, a player that they had been circling. And then finally the right opportunity came along to get him. And so with Jerry Jeudy sort of fits that mold as well. Taking a flyer on a guy, but they've sort of been circling him. He finally becomes available at the right time, and Andrew Berry swoops in and gets him.
Yeah, he was very opportunistic with this. It became a situation where the Broncos had to unload some salary cap issues and create some space heading into their own free agency period. And this is a player that, as you mentioned, they've had their eye on for actually a couple of years. There were two other times that I know of that they tried to acquire Jerry Jeudy, including at the trade deadline last offseason. So this was an opportunity to grab him for those late round picks. That was an absolute no-brainer. They still have a fifth round and a sixth round pick in the 2024 draft. Those were the top two selections that they traded to Denver, one coming from the Baker Mayfield trade, one coming from the Deshaun Watson trade with Houston. So they made good use of those picks, and Jerry Jeudy is a player that needed a change of scenery. We all saw last year Steve Smith went off on him. He hasn't been able to live up to his potential with the revolving door at quarterback there. And the Browns firmly believe that he will come here to Cleveland and flourish with Deshaun Watson.
Ashley, what was your first reaction when the trade happened?
Yeah, I think my first reaction was just having this knowledge, like Mary Kay said, of this is a guy that they had been thinking about the last few years. And I think at first I'm like, huh, my first surface level, obviously, instinct was what we talked about last week. I was all for them going out and getting Mike Williams. I thought it made so much sense. But I know, Mary Kay, you wrote this. When you look at these two guys, yes, one is more veteran and has arguably lived up to his potential more in Mike Williams. But he's also older. He's 30. Jerry Jeudy's only 24. And there is that ACL that, yes, I think ACL injuries are a lot different than they were even 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And the way guys come back from them is much faster. But there is still that element of, hey, this is a guy in his 30s coming back from a significant injury that cost him most of last season versus a guy who we think we can get in a different environment and he'll live up to that first round draft status that he was the first round pick at 15 overall in 2020. And I think it's understandable why the Browns think they can do something there. I think when they know they're going to have, hopefully, Deshaun Watson throwing him the ball for most of the season, that's one thing. I also think it's really intriguing, this idea to get him in that room with Amari Cooper. Of course, both of them are Alabama guys. I wrote a whole story towards the end of last season about Amari and how he's more than just this route runner. And we've seen firsthand the last two seasons how younger receivers in that room really gravitate to him and really take what he says to heart. I remember this quote Cedric Tillman told me, that when he's talking, even if he's not talking to me, I open up my ears and listen. So I think those two guys together, I'm really interested to see, because I think that same Alabama pedigree, I'm sure Jerry Jeudy has looked up to Amari Cooper for quite some time. I'm really curious to see what he's going to say about him. So all those things to me, once I thought about this a little bit more, I'm like, this makes a lot of sense, and I see why the Browns went this route.
You know, Mary Kay, when the Browns went and got Elijah Moore last year, I mean, he had not really put together, you know, look, we're still waiting to see what Elijah Moore can be. Jerry Jeudy is significantly more accomplished than Elijah Moore in his career. So I think there's similarities in these trades, but Jeudy costs less. But, I mean, you look at outside of 2021, when Jeudy only played 10 games, you're looking at 856 yards, 972 yards, 758 yards. This is a guy that has been a really productive receiver. And they end up getting him for less than they had to give up to bring in more. And I think you look at what Jeudy can do. Now it seems like you have a guy who could become a legitimate number two. And that allows Elijah Moore to sort of become more of that gadgety slot guy, which I think is where he fits best. This just sort of has the potential to put everything in place in that receiver room.
Well, it does. They will be playing more 11 personnel in 2024, which of course is three wide receivers. Therefore, you need to have three really good wide receivers in order to be able to do that. And now I think they feel like they have the three guys that they can put out there. They have different skill sets. They've got some route running. They've got some hands. They've got some speed. So they've got a nice mix for their 11 personnel. They feel really good about it. And then the other thing to consider is, when you're talking about these kinds of acquisitions, the draft pick compensation is almost in some ways secondary to the money. When you were talking about Amari Cooper, the fifth round pick that they traded to the Dallas Cowboys was really nothing, obviously. That was a salary cap move. It was a money move by the Cowboys. They did not want to pay Amari Cooper $20 million a year. The Browns were more than happy to pay him $20 million a year. In the case of Jerry Jeudy, he has a $12.8 million fifth-year option amount that he's playing under for 2024. Now, the Browns can either restructure that. They don't have to. That's a nice amount of money for a former first-round pick. They can either leave that be, or they can dig in there a little bit. They can give him a signing bonus and convert some of that to signing bonus, add a void year or two, and reduce that number if they need to find cap space. So this was really more so about money than it was about the draft picks, when it came to the point where the Broncos just needed to clear some space. So now the Browns, it's not like you go out and you draft a receiver and you don't have to pay him anything. They actually have to give this guy $13 million next year. They could also extend him if they think that this is going to work out. They can do a two-year contract and extend him and give him a new contract soon, or maybe even a three-year contract, whatever the case may be, and lower that cap number and have him for a few years. Again, he's 24 years old. It's so hard to believe that a receiver who's been around that long is still only 24 years old. It reminds me so much of David Njoku. When you get them that young at the age of 20, they just don't age. They can be around for 100 years and you still look and they're 24. So that's the case with Jerry Jeudy. And I think he does complement the other guys well. And I do think that Amari will be really good for him. I think that he will absorb all of that knowledge for Amari, who will become his instant mentor. And I think, of course, when you've got that Alabama connection, Amari is going to just open up his brain and pour every bit of wisdom that he can into Jerry Jeudy, so those Tigers, you know, represent well together.
Ashley, when you look at what Andrew Berry has done, you know, this is what I wrote about after the trade, all those day three picks and the way it's this combination of having these day three picks and having a super rich owner who doesn't care about spending money. So, you know, when you draft a guy in the fifth round or the sixth round, you're not going to pay him very much, right? That's the advantage you have. But also the likelihood of that guy becoming an NFL player are pretty slim. I mean, yes, there are Puka Nacua's, right? There's the safety that San Francisco got in the fifth round who, you know, got hurt this year, but he's, you know, a stud. There are guys like that, but it's few and far between. So Andrew Berry using these picks and just having owners who frankly don't care about how much cash they spend and how much money they spend, it's become very advantageous for him with Amari Cooper, Za'Darius Smith, you know, now this situation with Jerry Jeudy. It's just, he's really good at being opportunistic with these day three picks. And again, having that ownership group that doesn't care, it really helps him be able to jump in and take advantage of these things.
And I'll throw one more at you, which I know I think we both included this in our reaction stories, Dan, the Dustin Hopkins trade. That was shipping a seventh rounder off and keeping it moving, essentially. I think in both of our stories, Dan, we used like these financial metaphors, sort of. And I think they're both apply for the sides that, you know, give away the picks and ultimately get the picks. For Denver, I think you wrote this, that it's essentially a lottery ticket, right? That it's this hope that, hey, maybe this will amount to something, because like you said, there is that occasional Puka Nacua that is out there on day three that can come in and make an immediate impact. And I think when you're at the spot that the Broncos are at currently, where they're basically doing a sort of rebuild here, they're moving on from Russell Wilson. We'll talk about him a little bit later, I'm sure. And they kind of have to reshape that offense. And Jerry Jeudy, like we've been saying, never lived up to his potential there. So it just makes sense to go the cap route and, hey, you get some hope back with those picks. But my metaphor to Andrew Berry, these picks are essentially spare change that at this time of year become really valuable for them because it allows them to control more. And I think that's when we've seen Andrew at his best, making these deals. It's just when he's in control of more variables, he's aggressive, he's not letting these guys they really want or have liked for some time hit the open market. They're controlling the price a little bit more. And I think obviously his best deal is the Amari Cooper deal when he did that. So I think the more we see him do that, the more you kind of realize, okay, this is a guy who is going to be opportunistic but aggressive when the time is right. And I think so far, it's worked out for him. It's become one of his hallmarks as a GM. And this is just, as we've been saying, the latest example of that.
I'd also like to add that this is an opportunity to perhaps overcome some drafting challenges at the wide receiver position, shall we say. Again, their best acquisitions at receiver in the Andrew Berry regime have been trades. This is how they acquired Amari Cooper. It's how they acquired Elijah Moore. It's how they acquired Jerry Jeudy. When you look at the draft picks, and again, they have not had a first round receiver or a second round receiver where you can go out and find a Justin Jefferson or a Ja'Marr Chase or someone like that. But some of the guys that they have drafted haven't exactly worked out the way that they wanted. They had to part ways with Anthony Schwartz. They're sort of waiting to see if David Bell will become everything they thought he would be. Cedric Tillman, their third round pick from last year. He's coming up the learning curve, but this is an opportunity to sort of fill in those gaps when you haven't been able to draft the blue chip receiver.
Yeah. And I think that's an area too, where Andrew deserves a lot of credit is, you know, he's gotten really good at sort of recognizing mistakes and doing what he needs to fix them and sort of understanding, you know, like we went into last year and we thought this receiver room was short and, you know, we ended up being right about that. So they couldn't go into this year with like the same problem where you're counting on Cedric Tillman and David Bell. I mean, at this point you have to wonder if I'm doing the David Bell bubble watch again. But anyway, you know, you do have to wonder how that room's going to look but they needed to go get a receiver. And I think the other thing about this deal is once this new league year starts, once this tampering period opens, we're recording this at 11:25. Some of these numbers we see for receivers, I mean, that market has dried up so much. Like Calvin Ridley is probably going to make way more money than Calvin Ridley should make. And Hollywood Brown, you know, some of these guys are going to get paid a lot of money. And this is sort of Andrew getting ahead of that and getting a guy who, you know, is Jerry Jeudy as good as Calvin Ridley? Is he as good as some of these other guys? I don't know, but he's a pretty good player and you're getting him for pretty cheap this year and you didn't give up that much. So I think Andrew's done a really good job of identifying when he's made mistakes or identifying when moves haven't worked out and then going and fixing them however he can. And again, it helps when you have ownership who's willing to spend a bunch of money to help you fix some of those mistakes. So speaking of mistakes, let's take a break. And then quickly before we go, I do want to talk about Russell Wilson signing with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I'm back on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, about 35 minutes away from the NFL's tampering window opening. Let's talk about this signing that is going to happen on Wednesday. It was agreed to late Sunday night, maybe super early Monday morning. I don't remember exactly what time it was. It was all hazy. Russell Wilson is a Pittsburgh Steeler. I think this is interesting, Mary Kay. I don't think Russell Wilson, this isn't, you know, 2013 Russell Wilson. We know that he's not the quarterback he was. But the bottom line is, just like the Browns couldn't go into this year with the receiver room they had, the Steelers couldn't go into this year with the quarterback room they had. They could not have another season of Kenny Pickett as their starting quarterback. And they'll probably say all the right things and say it's an open competition, but there's no way they can keep starting Kenny Pickett or Mason Rudolph. So I don't know that this changes the balance of power in the AFC North, but it is a very interesting move, and the Steelers are a better football team because of it.
They are, and I think if you find the right coach and the right system for Russell Wilson, I think he can be very effective. You have to have a great supporting cast. I mean, I've been saying that Baker Mayfield wouldn't be Baker Mayfield without Mike Evans, and he's very lucky that Mike Evans is coming back to Tampa, because when somebody's out there catching 13 touchdown passes for you, then you're going to be a good quarterback. And so they're going to have to surround him with a really good supporting cast, and they're going to have to find a really good system and way of using Russell Wilson. We saw last year in Denver that he was plenty effective when the Broncos beat the Cleveland Browns, and they're going to have to try to find that version of Russell Wilson, who can run around and make those off-schedule plays and use his instincts and his legs and his arm talent and some gadget plays and some trickeries and some different things. They're going to have to find a way to bring out the absolute best in Russell Wilson if they want this to work and if they want to keep pace with Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Deshaun Watson. If he can do that, if they can find a little bit of the fountain of youth for Russell Wilson, they could be onto something here. They've got a good enough defense. They always have a good enough defense over there in Pittsburgh that they can make it work. They can win football games if they get good enough quarterback play. So I think it's an upgrade. It's very interesting to see how this is all going to go down, but they had to do something, and this was not the worst choice. I actually thought that they should have gone after Justin Fields, and I still think that if I were running the Pittsburgh Steelers, I would have gone down that road. Younger, more upside, and all of those kinds of things. But for whatever reason, this is where they went, and they're hoping it works.
Yeah, I agree. I would have liked to have seen Fields there. By the way, I do just want to point this out. Russell Wilson versus Deshaun Watson the last 2 years. Russell has a higher completion percentage, higher yards per attempt, higher yards per game, better rating, and slightly fewer rushing yards per attempt. So, you know, if you're a Browns fan out there laughing at the Steelers for going after Russell Wilson, let's just pump the brakes a little bit. He's been better than Deshaun Watson over the last 2 years. So there's that. Ashley, again, I don't know. Like I said, I don't think it changes the balance of power, but the Steelers are better. And I think Mary Kay makes a good point there. They've got a great defense, and, you know, they're going to continue to have a great defense and a great pass rush. So that's going to be good for Russell.
They are. And the last few hours, and Dan, to give you some context, I did text our group chat as soon as I saw the first tweet about this. It was 11:36 p.m. last night was when this first came out. And I think when Russell will, as soon as I texted, I saw Mary Kay retweet Russ's announcement on Twitter. So it was late last night, but since then, and since I've been thinking about this, what's stuck in my mind is this idea of, I think for, you know, the Steelers, like we're saying, this isn't completely power shifting, but I almost think for Russell Wilson, this is a best case scenario to land with Mike Tomlin. We know how much guys love playing for Mike Tomlin. And I just keep thinking about what Mike Tomlin got out of Ben Roethlisberger those last 2 years when he wasn't really that mobile anymore. And he wasn't really throwing many passes longer than 5 yards and everything they did. And they were still able to sneak into the playoffs that last year. They were still able to sneak into the playoffs this past season, obviously, with all the uncertainty in that room. So I think adding that pedigree of Russell Wilson, it may not be as ideal for the Steelers as I think going out and being aggressive and getting Justin Fields would be. But I do think for Russ, I'm really curious what this is going to do for his production. Because like you said, I don't think anyone should be laughing at the Steelers for this move by any means. Because these things historically, especially in recent history, have just kind of worked out in Mike Tomlin's favor. And that's why he doesn't have a losing season as their head coach.
Yeah, I mean, it's so... like, it's so simple, Mary Kay, but it really is like, you know what? The Steelers just kind of know what they're doing. And again, I don't know if this means they're going to make it to the AFC Championship game, but this is an organization that just generally knows what they're doing. So this might not work to the level of turning them into some kind of contender, but they're going to make it work. They're going to figure out how to make it work. And Arthur Smith is, you know, the OC there now, and he did a really nice job in Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill, an older quarterback, and, you know, a couple of big weapons to throw the ball to. And the Steelers have that. So that, I guess I would be more surprised if it's a disaster than I would be if it just works better than people think it will.
Yeah, I think as long, once again, as he has the supporting cast and the right system. I mean, if Arthur Smith can devise a really nice system for him, for someone who is sort of on the back nine, let's be honest about it, on the back nine of his Hall of Fame career, if they can drag the best out of Russell Wilson, then they could be onto something here. And once again, when you have a defense that can dominate like they do year after year after year, he doesn't have to play like the Hall of Fame quarterback that he is. He can go out and manage the game really well, and they do have to give him, I would say, supply him with a couple of more weapons, have a running game, and then they can be right there. They can, I mean, look what they did last year when they didn't have a quarterback as good as Russell Wilson. They made the playoffs when nobody believed that they would. So I do think that it's a bit of an upgrade. It's an interesting experiment. I don't know why they didn't go Justin Fields. I really don't understand that. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the next couple of years, actually. But I think this gives them an opportunity to be competitive with the other teams in the division.
Okay. We are going to wrap that up. I don't think you understand how stressful it has been for Mary Kay to have to sit in front of her computer and do a podcast here as the legal tampering period bears down. Does anyone want to make a prediction that might age poorly here? Because this is probably going to get posted right about as the tampering period begins. But like, Mary Kay, what do you think is... what, is there a surprise coming? Is Christian Wilkins realistic? What do you think?
You know, I think they're going into this, and I'm going to be writing about this as soon as we jump off here. But I do think that somehow they're going to end up with a big name defender. There's just too many good ones out there. I feel like Andrew Berry is just going to be so tempted by one of these guys. There are a lot of good ones. Eric Armstead is going to hit the market. You've got Christian Wilkins, who that would be my first choice. You've got Jonathan Greenard, Sheldon Rankins, Bryce Huff. They need one more really good defender. And I don't know if they're going into it willing to swing for the fences for one of these guys, but I think they're going to land one somehow, some way.
Ashley, I predicted in our newsletter on Monday, actually went out today, that between, it might not happen early, but like, are we sure Greg Newsom's going to be on this team? Seems like a really good trade chip for a guy that's going to be due $13 million on that fifth-year option. So that's one that I'm keeping an eye on.
That's a good question, Dan. I honestly hadn't thought about that. But again, when you're talking about the way, when I brought up before, that Andrew Berry likes to control certain things, it is interesting, but like Mary Kay said, there's some surprising guys defensively. I think like Eric Armstead is the latest one that are out there and that are suddenly available. And I think when people saw those big D tackle contracts come through this past weekend for Matabike and Chris Jones, I wondered, is a guy like Christian Wilkins just going to be out of the picture for the Browns? Is he going to be out of the price range? But as more of these guys become available, I'm really curious to see what that's going to do to the market. And yeah, I think right now the most likely thing is going to be a new defender at the front of the defense. However, they can make that happen. But the trade idea is interesting to me.
Okay, like I said,
Wait a minute. I just have to weigh in on the Greg Newsom thing. I'm sorry.
Yes, please do.
I mean, if we're talking about tendencies and trends with Andrew Berry, he does not give up on his draft picks easily at all, and especially his first round draft picks. So I don't see that happening. I don't think he would be willing to concede that Greg Newsom isn't everything that he's cracked up to be. I think cornerbacks are extremely hard to find, and I don't think that's a lot of money for a cornerback either. So I think they've got three really good starting caliber cornerbacks. I don't think he's going to part with one.
Okay. And by the way, just to clarify, that $13 million would be for 2025. That would be his fifth year option, so 2 years from now. They just have to make a decision on that. I think it's May 2nd is when they have to make that decision by. Okay, again, we're recording this at 11:35. By the time you hear this, the legal tampering period will have already started. So who knows? Maybe some of those predictions will be off the table by the time you listen to this. We're going to try and circle back a little bit later tonight after things settle down and do a part two of this podcast. So just get subscribed on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Become a Football Insider subscriber, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. Mary Kay and Ashley, I will talk to both of you later.